This is CliffCentral.com. Property,
I'm trying to invest. Money in by the neighborhood, that's how you rinse it. I could have bought a place in Dumbo before it was Dumbo for like $2 million. That same building today is worth $25 million. Guess how I'm feeling, Dumbo.
It's time to buy back the block. Buy back the block. It's time to buy back the block. Buy back the block. Buy back the hood. I'm about to buy back the hood.
You know when you hear that it's time for Living It Up with Lerato Shabalala. How is everybody today? It is the last Wednesday of September. And you know how we roll from 10 until 11 every Wednesday. We give you nothing but the best in real estate and property. If you missed last week's podcast, remember you can go to cliffcentral.com. I was in the studio with the man who sponsors the show himself, Mr. Ralimam Peule. He was here with me last week talking about the ups and downs of real estate. Like I said, you can go to cliffcentral.com to find out more about that. No, I'm sorry, we're actually talking about property in predominantly black areas or townships and how you should invest in them. You can also go to our Facebook page on Living It Up with Lerato Shabalala on Facebook. Follow us, please friend us, comment on our page, and we just love to hear from you. Today, I'm quite excited because I've actually interviewed this man before. This is my second time interviewing him, and I wanted to bring him in, not because I have experience with interviewing him, and he's got a great voice, and he's got an impeccable taste, too. We will have pictures later on.
Oh, you're too kind.
Which you can check out on our Facebook page as well. So one of the things that I have found out is that 4 out of 5 people who are applying for a home loan have to do it through a financial institution. So not all of us have tatted our chances and our millions and then have, you know, cash to buy property. So most people, 4 out of 5 people in South Africa who apply for a home loan have to do it through an institution. It's not because they have their own money. So you are going to, at some point, have to speak to somebody like Timothy. And I wanted to bring him in here because I know he's a great interview, but also, just to kind of demystify, particularly for the banks,
to demystify
the kind of misgivings,
misgivings
that people have, you know, around banks. So I have the head of home loans, sales, and client value management for Nedbank. Which have you just relaunched as a bank?
We haven't relaunched. We've just had a review of our brand position.
So
we moved from make things happen to see money differently.
So this is Mr. Tim Akinusi, Timothy to you. And as I said, he's the executive head of home loans, sales, and client value management at Nedbank. So Tim, I thought we could start quickly by talking about the fact that 4 out of 5 people applying for home loans have to go through a bank, right?
Yeah.
And most people have the sense of trepidation when faced with, I'm going to have to go through the process.
Are we going to grant you the loan?
Yeah, will I get it?
And how much?
Do they want people with millions and millions or hundreds of thousands? And, you know, do I have to have a card that's black, et cetera, et cetera? And the truth of the matter is that in a country like South Africa, where we are still addressing and redressing a lot of historical issues, there are many people in this country. I would reckon that 80% of the people would have to go through a bank.
Sure.
And so there are 6 touch points that people say you must look at. But I thought that maybe we could start off with your experience. I interviewed you 2 years ago. So this is something that you're, you know, quite a fan. I do want to ask you about renovations because you were part. If you didn't see Tim on television, he was on
Winner Home.
Winner Home. Oh, SABC 3.
Am I right? SABC 3.
SABC 3. And I have a personal thing around renovations and how your property looks on the interior. We've had a good friend of mine, interior designer Ntabita Wukubong, here on the show as well, talking about the interior of the house and how we can make it better. So, Tim, What are banks looking for? Let's start there. When I'm a customer who's about to apply for a home loan, what are banks looking for? What kind of person will find themselves being given 100% loan? And what kind of a person finds themselves getting maybe 50%? What are you looking for?
Sure. So let me start by saying banks very much are in the business of creating homeowners by giving you a loan to buy your dream house or your investment property, whatever it is you want to do within the property sector. So what we want to make sure is that because this is a long-term commitment, we want to establish two things. You know, firstly, it's to establish that you have a healthy relationship with credit. How have you been able to make steady and consistent repayments on small debts, your credit card, your car, a clothing account, etc.? So we look to the credit bureaus to give us a record of how you've managed repayments over a long period of time. Then secondly, we want to also make sure that you can afford it. So what is your income? What are you earning? And how much disposable income do you have to commit to a property? So affordability is also key. And once we're able to establish those two aspects, we very much want to get into a long-term agreement with you where we can fund your home, show you how to maintain it, show you how to restructure it if you should get into any financial difficulty, just to ensure that this property remains an asset to you and that it can serve you in the long run. That's what we're trying to do.
So often, I mean, we've had different people here on the show, and when I say different people, I mean in the sense of people who bond originators, etc. We'll get to that.
Sure.
Who have advice on, okay, this is what, you know, if you go to one bank won't give you the best price. And so I thought we'll get to that. I wanted to touch on that so that you can, it can percolate in your mind. But you've touched on the first two points. Apparently there are six questions that you should ask yourself before you apply for a home loan, which is, what is your credit score, which you refer to?
Absolutely.
I think, and what is your annual income? Now I want to sort of combine those two questions and say to you, as a bank, when you're looking at the a person's score or whether they can afford a property, right?
Right.
Can a person, I don't want to say cook their...
Manipulate their, things, yes, misrepresent
yes,
things.
Yes, that's the right one. Yeah,
well, I think people do that, obviously, because they feel nervous about being declined or not being able to get the right amount of credit from the banks. So they'll often misrepresent their earnings or their affordability. And I must say that serves nobody, you know, because at the end of the day, this is a long-term commitment. We want to protect you to make sure that when we do give you a loan, that you can actually afford to make your repayments comfortably so that this property remains an asset. So it's not going to impair your credit record because you haven't been able to keep up with payments. And at the end of the day, you know, you're going to live in this house. You don't want to always be concerned about the phone call from the banks to say, you know, we are missing a couple of payments. When are you going to catch up? That's not the sort of relationship that a bank wants to have with its clients. So it's always best to just give us a true sense of what you can afford and to be conservative, because when you're conservative, you put yourself in a position where over time, maybe there's an interest rate hike or you have some unforeseen renovations you want to do, that you have some level of contingency that you can continue to make those repayments comfortably and live in your house.
So when you say be conservative, do you mean in the sense of the house? I think I can afford $2 million. But in actual fact, when I look at everything that I have to pay for, maybe I should rather aim for 1.5 million as opposed to 2 million. Do you mean in that sense? So you're not sort of overshooting what you can afford?
Yes, I think that's part of it. Certainly to make sure that you are buying a place that you can afford comfortably over a long period of time. I think the other thing that's important is where you have contractual expenses, don't understate those, because those are fixed expenses that will go off in your account every single month. So where you have variable expenses and you say, well, I used to eat out four times a week, that used to cost me 3,500 rand. then of course you can then tell yourself, listen, I'm getting into a long-term relationship with a bank and this property is important to me, so therefore I'm willing to cut back on the amount of times I eat out. So therefore now I have, if you cut it down by 50%, now you have another grand five to put towards the repayment of the house or the payment of levies, etc., etc. What we've done from a Nedbank perspective is we've actually developed a product to allow customers to shop with confidence. So it's called Instant Bond Indicator.
Okay.
It's a simple online tool. You simply go on, you complete 14 fields, and we will give you a real-time view of your credit as well as your affordability of what the bank will give you when you've actually found your property. So we'll tell you exactly how much we expect your repayments to be, a range, and also the costs that are involved. So your transfer cost, your registration cost, and you know, the initiation fee. So what that does is that once you've completed this application, it's a very short one.
Yeah, because people, when they hear application, they think like forms and forms.
It really is. It's exactly what its name suggests, Instant Bond Indicator. It gives you a very good indication of what Nedbank is likely to give you when you find your property.
Right.
So now you can meet with your estate agent, you can shop with confidence because you've now said Nedbank is prepared to give me this for this house.
Right.
So now if the score comes back and says you can afford a house for R1 million, you now know, don't bother looking at the house for 1.5. Unless you can negotiate the price back down to million.
Of course, yes.
You kind of know exactly sort of the range that you're working with.
So I, just in case you're wondering who this man with the smooth ass voice is, this is the executive head of home loans, sales and client value management at Nedbank, Mr. Timothy Akunusi. So, listen, if you have a meeting right now and you are not able to listen to the podcast as we speak, remember you can go back and download it on cliffcentral.com. We are live and direct every Wednesday with me, Lerato Shabalala, from 10 until 11. And remember, this podcast is brought to you by the one and only Rally Mampewule. You can go to rally-mampewule.co.za to find out more about Rally properties as well as this podcast. So, Tim, I want to ask you, and I'll just be honest.
Sure.
A lot of people say, why do I need to have credit to get credit? Why do I need to owe somebody for you to give me money? How come a bank is maybe not unwilling, but why are banks mandated to fund people that have credit as opposed to people who are debt free, as it were? Why does it work that way? And it's worked that way. By the way, this is not something that Nedbank alone does. It's worked that way since the banks were developed in the 1800s. So this is how it's been.
Yeah, look, I think that's a very loaded sort of question to say why do you need credit to get credit. I think what banks are looking for is some level of payment behavior.
Okay.
And you can only establish that once you've been in a position where people have entrusted you with some credit and you've demonstrated your ability to make repayments consistently. So I think simplistically, it then looks like, oh, you know, the bank has, you know, requires me to go get a credit card just so that I can get more money from them in the form of a home loan or a car loan or whatever the case might be. And I think it's not so much about the banks want you to get involved in credit, but that's a way we could formally all agree that this is your behavior with credit over the recent past. Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's almost in a sort of similar way that you apply for a job and they want to know what experience do you have working.
Yeah, in a way, because
the more senior you are, the more money you want, you've got to prove that you have been around the block and you know how to handle yourself.
And your track record says something about you. It's not about take my word for it. There it's in black and white. I've held an Edgar's account for 3 years and I've never missed a payment. It's in black and white. You don't have to try to convince the
somebody
bank manager
exactly that no that can, actually that I can manage.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So a lot of people, what we found out through doing these podcasts, and for me, one of the reasons why I wanted to do it is that we often talk about, you know, oh, bring back the land, but what happens once you have it? So what I'm committed to is giving people the tools of understanding what it means to have a property and not just have it for the sake of having it. Where, what location have you bought in? And we'll get into that a little bit later. But also just understanding how the property market works is a huge part of why I do this. Now, they say that 80% of people who are applying for a home loan are applying for the first time. Okay.
Wow, that's a high stat.
That's high number, right?
Yeah.
So if I'm listening to this podcast, which you can download on clearcentral.com, and I have had my first job for about 6 months to 8 months or whatever the case may be, or even 2 years, okay,
sure.
I am now thinking of, okay, I want to see, I think I can afford property for 5,000 rands or whatever the case may be. What kind of credit is a bank looking for? What is good credit? What should I look for? Obviously, you're not telling everybody to go and open a store account for the sake of opening a store account. But is there good debt that the banks are looking for as opposed to a bad debt?
I don't think it's so much about good or bad debt, but it's about your relationship with it.
Okay.
You know, when you've taken out credit, have you made repayments consistently?
Mm.
So the bank is not going to judge you to say you've taken out a personal loan, and therefore we think that you are irresponsible with credit.
No. Yeah.
Because your personal loan could be used to build a house, could be used to pay school fees, which are good things, good ways of using credit. What I think that is important is that we want to make sure that whatever credit we advance in you, you have the earnings to support monthly repayments over a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'll always advise is that credit is good. Credit helps you get the things that you need immediately.
Mm.
So you're not having to spend a long period of time trying to save up for something that, you know, you can use to advance your life today.
As I said to you earlier, we're talking to Mr. Timothy Okunisi, who is the executive head of home loan sales and client value for NetBank. You will be able to download this podcast immediately as soon as we switch off the mic. You'll be able to download it on clearcentral.com. And as I said to you, this podcast is brought to you by Raleigh Properties. You can go to raleigh-mambuweb.co.za to learn more about Raleigh Properties as well as the podcast. So one of the things they ask you, Tim, to be aware of, well, think about, is a deposit. Okay. Now, I've asked this to different people,
sure.
Bond originators, Raleigh himself when he's been here. How do you know that you have a good deposit? What should you be thinking about when you're thinking of a deposit for a place? And I mean, we can start conservatively with, say, 600,000 houses. I think that's what is called the affordable market.
So that's about from a place that is valued at 600 to about 300,000. So that's the range for affordable housing.
Okay.
But to your point around deposits, right? Deposits are there for two reasons. So if you want the quantum, it's between 5 to 10%.
Okay.
You know, that's a comfortable range. We also understand that not everybody has had the opportunity to or the time to have saved up for a deposit, especially first time home buyers where they haven't had the opportunity to have paid off a house before, had some property appreciation and had a lump sum to then put into the next house.
Mm.
So those would be the first time home buyers who are not in that position. The second one would be the segment of affordable housing clients, individuals who we know just they've never had a strong history of savings and cash on hand is a challenge.
Mm.
But we still believe that they should be homeowners. And to that end, what we do is we try to provide as many opportunities for them to get 100% loan.
Mm.
With our home loans, our NetBank home loans, affordable housing product, what we've done is that we've actually waived the initiation fee, which is a fee of about close to 6,000 rand for our affordable housing clients, just to assist them with being able to afford to afford the house
that they'll be going into.
So how do they know that they fall within this category, Tim, of the affordable housing?
There's an income criteria.
Okay.
So there's an income criteria that we use, and that's up to about 22,500 rands joint income.
Which, if you're listening, and the only reason I know this is because I'm a journalist, if you're listening, you're thinking, how did the bank come to 22,000? The average household income in South Africa is about 20K. So it is sort of based on a sort of a general a figure for
sure.
What people in South Africa earn.
Sure.
So it wasn't pulled out of the ether. So I've read somewhere that it also can be between 10% and 30% of your bond.
Yeah, I think, you know, you can make the deposit as big as you want it to.
Okay.
It's all about your access to that free cash.
Mm.
But what we'd like to see is some commitment from new home buyers to say, if you're able to put down 5% to 10%, then we know you're committed to this.
Mm.
You are signaling to the bank that, you know, this is a property that you want to pay off over maybe even a shorter period of time beyond the contractual 20 to 25 years.
Mm.
And what that also does is that it gives you leverage to be able to negotiate on what type of rate you get from the banks.
What type of interest rate you get from the banks.
Absolutely,
bank. Yes.
Absolutely. So on the one hand, it gets you what people would call skin in the game.
Right.
So having some level of equity in it, and we know that you are unlikely to default once you've actually put down your own money into it.
Right.
And that's why the deposit then becomes quite an important tool in, you know, in how to manage risk, both for the bank as well as for clients,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. Now, before we get to the fun part, because I have a thing for home renovations, etc., and you were a judge on behalf of Nedbank for the Winner Home Show, I wanted to address something with you. So we've had two bond originators in the last couple of months of these podcast, which I said you can get on cliffcentral.com, Living It Up with Lerato Shabalala. We've had conversations with bond originators who have said,
sure,
the reason why you should go with us is because we will give you the best rate. We will go to 5 or 6 or different banks and we'll get the best rate for you. Because when you go to one bank and they know that you're only going to them, it is unlikely that they will give you the best rate. I'm almost quoting verbatim. Okay. So now that I have somebody who's in charge of home loans and works for a bank, how true is that? Should we listen to that advice as customers and go, oh,
okay,
I don't know.
Right.
What is the truth in that, and how do banks approach that type of thing?
So let me answer this question this way. I didn't, you know, have the opportunity to listen to a podcast.
Okay.
I would have, you know, wanted to have heard it firsthand.
Yeah.
But what I will say is that bond originators work with banks.
Yes.
They work with us because they are another channel in which they bring applicants to us.
Mm-hmm.
And their value proposition is a pretty good one. You know, the idea that somebody can go out and get multiple quotations for you,
mm,
okay? And the math is a simple one. If I'm dealing with one bank, I have 1 in 4 chances of getting the bond, versus, mm, dealing with 4 banks, I've got 4 chances of actually getting an approved bond.
Mm.
So the more quotes you have out there, that just increases your chance of getting an approval.
Mm.
And that's what they provide. Whether or not they do it in practice or how they execute it, I can't speak, in a lot of detail around that. I think the originators, you know, they kind of, they know how to apply their minds to each client.
Mm.
But what I will say is that if you, in most instances, about 60% of the adult population in South Africa is already banked.
Mm.
Your bank, typically, because you have your transaction account with them, you've got potentially credit cards, other banking products with them, they should know enough about you. So
yeah,
they should be the ones to get you the best possible rate or LTV or best package.
Mm.
In practice, it doesn't always happen that way.
Yes, it happened to me. I had a bank that I was with my whole life, and they rejected me,
sure.
which means I left them and went to another bank and got a home loan from there. So
right,
sometimes
right.
a bank can know your credit history and still refuse.
And still refuse, right? But I think that in most instances, because they know enough about you, they should be the ones to put the best deal on the table
yes.
because they want to retain your services, retain you as a client, and they don't want to run the risk that you experienced where
yeah.
you actually had to move your banking accounts elsewhere.
Yeah.
What I do think is important to say is that when you're looking for any financial product, and in this case it's a home loan, it's best to always go directly to your bank. Speak
okay.
to your banker. They will demonstrate a certain level of understanding about where you're at, and they'll be able to assist you with the best possible deal.
Mm.
I think in anything, we know that once you're a little bit removed from the individuals that are giving you the financing, you introduce certain levels of cost
mm.
involved, you know. For example, if I were in the life insurance space, if I went directly to a life insurer, I'm likely to negotiate better and get the best rate rather than going through a broker who would potentially charge you brokerage fees.
Yes, yes,
et cetera,
yes.
Right? So my advice is to get the best experience, to be able to get somebody who understands you fully, that you can, you know, have dialogue with. And you know, share whatever concerns you have with them.
Mm.
It's best to approach your bank first.
No, okay. Now the bond originators, Tim, because they work with the banks,
yes.
they're able to come back and say, well, Bank X has said they'll give this person X amount. What can you give them? Can I, as a customer, after having talked to you as my bank, I'm at NetBank, I tell you guys that I want to do this, and I then go somewhere else to ask for another opinion, can I come back and say to you as my bank, as a customer, and say, Bank X has said this to me, is this really the best rate you can give me? Is that within the realm of reality for customers?
Absolutely. Absolutely, and that's I suppose the prevailing practice today is that customers who get one quote would shop around.
Mm.
You know, they would what we like to call horse trading. You know, they would take
okay.
one quote and they would try and get the other banks to better it, etc. Which obviously becomes very difficult for us to bank a customer once you know we have. A lot of horse trading going on because,
mm.
You know, then customers are simply just driving the price down,
mm.
you know. And this is not just a banking issue. This happens across a lot of industries,
yeah.
you know, in the short term space, as soon as people's premiums are likely to go up, what do? They go out, they look for other options, right?
Yeah.
So
it's just, as you say, it's, if it's within the realm of reality, I think a lot of people are going to feel like, oh, okay, so I can come back. Because I think people become hesitant when they think they only have that one option.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I guess what Timothy's trying to say to you is take it upon yourself to make sure that you have done the research.
Sure.
And you sure. are basically the one who will open the door to getting the best rate. As I said to you, we're talking to the executive head for home loan sales and client value management at NetBank, Mr. Timothy Akinusi. Remember that as we finish this podcast at 11 a.m. you'll be able to download it immediately on cliffcentral.com. You can also go to our Facebook page, which is Living It Up with Lerato Shabalala, and basically get to see Tim himself. So when you see him in the mall, you can say, hey Tim, why hasn't NetBank funded me? Speaking of NetBank, you were one of the judges for the NetBank Win a Home yeah. show, which was on, I think, about 2 years ago in 2015.
Yeah.
And The show was interesting for me because I've always been interested in home loan renovations.
Sure.
And I think what has happened as a result of several TV shows coming up, people have wanted fixer-uppers.
Sure.
Okay, so most people say...
Exciting.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I want a house because often people say, you can get a house that doesn't look great as long as it's in the right neighborhood. And we'll get to the location and how banks... find you according to where you are. So if I want to fix a rapper,
right?
Okay, I want to turn it into what I want it to be. Maybe I have an art deco type feel about me, and I want to show that. Maybe, you know, I'm an interest in architecture. Somebody like me who watches grand designs, and so
right.
I want to my building to speak about the vernacular language of the.
You want it to be an extension of
yeah,
you,
of myself, yes, my yes, personality. Yes. But I'm not really sure how to go about it. Does a bank like NetBank do, particularly because I think you're the only bank who's shown commitment to showing people how they can make their houses better.
Right.
Do I get a lesser home loan and then get a loan to fund the renovations? Or what packages do banks have for people who want, does NetBank have for people who want to be able
to fix their homes
to
up?
To fix their okay. homes up.
Yeah. So, again, it all depends on what you can afford, okay. right? And one of the dangers, the common dangers of fixer-uppers, as you would call them, is you don't want to overcapitalize on the place. So you don't want to buy a place and renovate it and spend too much, because at the end of the day, once it's been valued, you've got to have created value from yep. the place. So this idea of yours is great. You know, you want to create a house that reflects yourself, reflects your life stage, and just, you know, something that gives you joy, right? What I think you should always bear in mind is that you also are building an asset. You also want to be in a position where one day you can sell this thing off and, you know, and have so-called flipped it in a way that whatever you've spent on the renovations has been an investment to enhance the value of it.
And you're able to recoup it.
Recoup that yeah. investment, right?
Yeah.
So, and recouping is not just about the financial, the money that you've put into it, also your time and effort, you know, and obviously your creativity, etc. So it's always best to, when you are looking for a home loan for a house that's already existing and you want to make repairs on it, let the bank know okay. so that we're in a position to value that house correctly. And we've got something called, I forget the name of the product right now, but it's a product that allows you to register a higher amount than what you're actually bonding so that you can at some point in time come out and take out a further loan to be able to then make whatever renovations you would like to make.
I really do hope you remember that term, what the product term, because
I will
it's important for somebody like me who I have gotten two properties before, and what I learned, and I was talking to Gareth Cliff about this recently, is that actually even if you've bought several properties, you still don't know everything there is to know.
Sure.
And that has been a personal project for me to say, I do want my next property to have a sense of who I am. You know, I don't want to buy a house and be charged for somebody else's granite tops
sure.
and sherry wood
right,
kitchen.
Right,
like,
right.
I want to stamp myself, but I obviously don't have as much money as I would have liked to where I can fund the renovation myself. So I've often wanted to know what banks have, and I think this is quite awesome that you have this product offering. So we have 20 minutes before we end the show. So hopefully within that time, Mr. Timothy Akinusi will contact somebody at his office and let us know what the product offering is. You are tuned into Living It Up with Lerato Shabalala. We are live and direct every Wednesday from 10 until 11 on cliffcentral.com. Remember, as soon as we're out of here, you can download the podcast. I just want to remind you once again that the podcast is brought to you by Raleigh Properties. You can go to raleighmampewule.co.za to get more information on Raleigh himself as well as this podcast. I wanted to remind you that if you missed last week's show where Raleigh was talking about, by the way, we had such a great Heritage Day this past weekend, and we were basically talking last week about properties in the townships, or what is predominantly known as the affordable market, and why you need to invest in that. So Tim, I wanted to ask you, so a lot of people think, okay, I want to invest in property. Me and three of my friends, I can't do it by myself, but me and three of my friends can come together. And if you pay 3,000, 3,000, 3,000, you can buy a house together.
Sure.
Now, people that I know who've done that are people who own property themselves but want to have more but can't do it by themselves, you know, whether you're a single mother or whatever the case may be.
Right.
So you do it with your friends.
Sure.
How amiable are banks to that kind of sort of collective
arrangement? Yeah, collective buying.
Yeah.
So we, in fact, I would say that a good 40% of the applications that we receive are joint bonds.
Okay.
So from a joint bond perspective, that could be two people or even three. And what we'll simply do is request that we get all the same information from one co-applicant as we do the next and the next. So we would need the income and expenditure, would need their IDs, proof of well, their banking statements, and proof of income. Right. And as soon as we have the pay slip and all the information, we'll do an assessment and we'll be able to say collectively, you can afford X.
Mm.
And one person, the main applicant, would then be assigned to say, okay, well, would you be making the repayments? And you would then be accountable together with your co-applicants for repaying the loan. And typically all three of you would be registered as owners of the property.
So you would suggest that if you were, whoever's listening to this podcast would want to do a similar thing, that you as a collective, whether it's two of you or five of you, whatever the case may be, actually inquire about each other's credit history before. Like, just
I think it would be a good idea to have that conversation because the banks are going, we will assess each member of that collective.
Yeah, so it's good to be honest to each other,
yes,
right?
Absolutely.
Or else it might be awkward. So a very sort of precarious issue with people is transfer costs. And why they seem to be so hectic. With my first property, I ended up asking the bank to fund my transfer costs because I was not even aware that I needed to pay transfer costs.
Right.
So, for a first-time buyer, I think if you're buying your property for the second time, you now be aware that if it's not new or a development that you're getting for the first time, that there will be some transfer costs that will be expected on your side. For first-time buyers, when it comes to transfer costs, is that something that you speak to your agent or your bank about quite early on when you say, oh, I walked into this house, I love this house, it's $800,000. How much will the transfer cost be? Or do you wait until the process is in motion before you find out whether you're paying $60,000 or $50,000 or
right,
whatever the case may be?
The simple answer to that is it's always best to understand all the costs that are involved right up front.
Mm.
Because then at least you know how to prepare for them and you're not caught off guard.
Yeah, unawares,
right.
Yeah.
And this is not really a what do they call those? A poking or you know, when you, this is not a plug.
Okay.
But I do want to say that what we do is that with our product instant bond indicator, when you get an indication of what we can loan you, we also play back to you all the costs that are involved.
Okay.
So your registration cost, which is the cost that the attorneys will charge you.
Okay.
And in many instances, we can actually give discounts on that because we've got great relationships with our attorney partners, so we can give you a discount on that. And then the transfer cost, that is almost a tax to the government. So banks don't get involved in that. That's
okay.
Just that's the cost to transfer the property
from the existing owner
to the new owner.
Yeah.
And one of the things that the government has done is that they've constantly tried to lift what the starting point of that cost would be. So I think right now, I think if you're buying a property that is less than 750,000,
I was about to touch on
that. Yes. They would not charge you any transfer duties on that.
I remember, Riley, I was actually, did you see me going through my notes? I was actually looking to see what the amount is, because I know, I think it's about 700,000.
Yeah.
Whereas
I'm
it
not
before,
sure if it's actually been lifted to 900,000.
Really?
On the last budget speed, but that would be a really good surprise if it has been lifted.
That would really be a good surprise.
Because it literally means that for either you're buying a property that is worth that amount, then you're exempt from paying the transfer cost on it. Or if you're buying a property that's 2 million, for the first 750, if it's a 750 now, you are not going to be paying transfer costs on that. You'll be paying it on the balance, which is the it's 1.25.
And I think it's a wonderful way of banks showing a commitment to consumers to say, we understand where we are in the economy, and this is not just South Africa, this is globally.
Right.
And when obviously the things were booming and people could afford it, I love the fact that it was changed recently. I think it was just a couple of months ago when it was changed. So I was going to touch on that and say, but that said though, at least nowadays, you it depends on how much money your how much the property is.
Yes.
So I wanted to ask you, and I say this once again, I'm speaking to Timothy Akinusi, who is the executive head of home loan sales and client value management at Nedbank, today talking to us about what banks are looking for when people are applying for a home loan, because four out of five people applying for home loans in South Africa have to do it through a bank. So at some point or another in your financial life, when you're buying property as a homeowner or as a real estate somebody who's interested in real estate, you're going to have to deal with somebody like a Timothy. So it's best to have him here and have him talk to you. So obviously people say location is everything. If I say to you, I want to live in place X, and that place, for whatever reason, does not have, maybe you sort of look at the history of the place and the property has been depreciating, and we're actually lucky in South Africa, and you can go into different websites where, they tell you what the property in that place has been going for the past 6 months.
Right.
So you, without even involving the bank, will be able to make an assessment of whether this is where you should be living.
Yeah.
But let's say, hypothetically speaking, you do insist that you want to live in this particular suburb.
Right.
And you as a bank are aware that there have been break-ins, or there's a high crime situation, or property for whatever reason is just depreciating.
Sure.
Are you most likely to say no and end there, or do banks kind of say to you, with the help of your estate agents, whatever the case may be, look, we don't fund in this area, but we could fund you in that area?
Right. So I think you've asked a very good question. So I think the first thing I would say is that from a Nedbank standpoint, we don't do what is typically called redlining. So we don't say this is a complete no-go area. In fact, there are very few, unless the area is just completely dilapidated. There are no houses where we can make comparative valuations on. Then we would advise you to say, hey, we don't think that your property is a good security in this place, right? What we do is that we also grade areas. So we grade areas based on things like the default rates that have happened in those particular areas. If we've seen multiple defaults happening, if we're not seeing developments, new developments happening there, shopping malls, good schools, network of roads, etc., we would typically grade that place a lot lower than something that is, that's showing signs of growth and constant development.
Mm.
And I think you, as a potential homeowner, when you walk into an area, you've also got to, just apply logic.
Mm.
Does this place look like it's well kept? Is it well lit? Is there maintenance happening?
Mm.
Can you get in and out of the place, very easily? Are amenities within walking distance, etc.?
Mm.
That should start to give you a vibe of the sort of area it's in.
Mm.
Because you want to buy in an area that is sought after.
Mm.
Because when you want to resell, it means that you have a better chance of getting people that are likely to buy your place. And that's typically the logic that one needs to follow.
So as a bank, Nedbank is what you're saying, if I'm decoding correctly, that it's unlikely that you'll say no, but you won't give somebody a million rand house if the value in that place is 250,000 rand. Is
absolutely
what you're saying?
It just wouldn't make sense. Yeah, no, so we not would at do all. Comparative sales, you know?
Yeah.
And in many instances where we're not able to get a clear comparative from a desktop valuation, which is using reports that have been gathered to kind of give you a comparison of what the same or similar size house sold for, we would actually send out a valuer to actually go out, eyeball the place, take a look around and see what's happening.
Okay. So with about 10 minutes to go before we finish off with Timothy Akinusi from Nedbank, I wanted to speak to you about paying a little bit more on your bond. Okay. So people would tell you if the bond will finance you for a million,
right,
don't just pay the, let's say it was 10,000 rand, so, that you have to pay. Pay slightly more. Mm. First of all, how do I arrange that with my bank? Once again, how amiable is the bank to that kind of arrangement? And once again, how much should I pay? Should I pay 250 rand? Should I pay 2 grand? Right. Is there a benchmark?
Well, there's no benchmark. I think you can pay as much as you can afford, really. Mm. So this is public knowledge, and I think you know, any good financial advisor will tell you to say, if you can pay more than your contractual repayment amount, it's always a good thing because you can shorten the term that you need to pay back, and you can also soak up and absorb some of the interest charges that you would be charged by the bank.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, I'll have to state it, it's not good news for banks when people prepay into their bonds, because then we typically are not making money, as much money as we would make, given that we have price for this, we've set you a repayment.
Well, at least you're honest about
that. Right.
Yes.
No, I think it's general knowledge, you know. And as much as people know that, because of their circumstances, they're actually only able to afford exactly what the bank has required them to pay.
Mm.
But the individuals who can, they prepay into their bonds. The money is there. It's accessible to them whenever they need it via what we call an access bond.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a good way of parking funds. You know, it's a good way of building up some level of savings whilst you're also reducing your interest payment on a monthly basis.
Mm.
So if you go online, if you've got a bond now and you're able to access your bond statements via internet banking, you can very clearly see how much your repayment has been, say your 10,000 rand, and how much of that has actually gone towards paying off interest.
Okay.
So you can actually see the difference, and the difference is what you're then actually paying back. And that's a good way of gauging that. So the minute you increase your repayment, you'll start to see that the next on your next month's debit order, the interest charge is a lot less. You can see that immediately.
Almost immediately.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I guess that's the easiest way anybody has put it to me on this show since I've been on, which is to say, look, assess your monthly repayments,
right,
and figure out, look at how much it is.
How much it is, and how much interest you've been charged for it. Yeah.
So that you can basically figure out how much more you can pay.
Absolutely.
Nobody has explained it like that until now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the point of shows and having people like you on. I remember you can go to netbank.co.za to find out more about Nedbank's instant bond indicator, which is probably the first place you should go if you're looking to get a loan through NedBank, it basically tells you what your financial health is, as it were. You know, it tells you if...
Yeah, if we will tell you in real time what you can afford and what your credit health has been.
Yeah, and affordability is one of the first six questions you should ask yourself before you buy a property. That also includes your credit history, you know.
And also your life stage.
Yes.
You know? I think that people often underestimate that as a consideration, because if you're a young bachelor and you don't expect to be married in the next 5 years, well then buy something that suits your life stage.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And when you know that you are likely to get married and you want to start a family, then start preparing to get a bigger place.
Yeah.
But don't buy a one bedroom when you know you're getting married in 6 months time and you want to start a family, because that might not be sufficient for your young family.
Yeah, and that might also be costly, because it takes 3 months to even
It's a costly exercise,
yes.
Right? And obviously you want to get a place that suits your family's needs.
Yes.
So you don't want to buy a place and then try and resell it within 6 months to a year.
Yeah, exactly.
Because chances are you're likely to lose money on that.
Now, yeah. Tim, I'm going to do something that is completely not good for interviewers to do, which is I'm going to end with a difficult question.
Shoot.
Why should people trust banks? I mean, if we've had somebody like the CEO of Better Bonds coming in here saying, you know, we will give you a better rate than the banks, and people have this thing that banks are always taking my money. Well, why should we trust you when investing in one of the most important things we'll ever put into our lives, which is real estate, which is property? Why should I, as Tembi from Guamashu, or Palisa from Soshanguve, why should I trust the fact that a bank will look after my best interests?
So let me answer your question this way. I'll tell you why I think you should trust NedBank.
Okay.
Right? I can only speak
not
for
every
NedBank.
Bank.
And that's not to say that you
of
know
course.
All the other banks are not to be trusted. I can only speak for the bank that I work for currently. One of the things that we've set out to do as banks is to understand clients' need in a very in-depth way. So when we want to give you a bond, we are not solely concerned about the transaction. We want to educate you. We want to make sure that you understand the costs that are involved, all the channels that you can use that will be convenient for you. We want to make sure that you understand what you can do when you get into difficulty, either to restructure your loan agreement, or we'll help you sell your property. These are things that we don't necessarily make money off of, but we do it in the best interest of customers, because we know once a customer is well informed and well equipped, they can make good decisions and we can have a long lasting relationship where the property that you end up buying can be an asset for you, for your kids, etc., etc. So we're not just about dishing out the loan to you. We want to make sure that you are a better, well-informed individual. And that's the one reason I think you should be able to trust NedBank. Other reasons would be, it's not in our best interest to give you a loan that you can't afford. Okay, because we don't want to be in a position where we go to sale and execution, because we lose money, your credit record is impaired, and it's a no-win situation,
yeah.
Right? So from that perspective, I would think that those are pretty good reasons enough to trust that a bank is here to make your dreams come true, make your dreams of home ownership come true in a way that is responsible and in a way that creates value for you in future.
Thank you so much. That is Mr. Timothy Akinusi, the Executive Head of Home Loan Sales and Client Value Management at NedBank. Remember, as soon as we're finished in about a minute, you can download this podcast on cliffcentral.com. My name is Lerato Shabalala. Follow us on Facebook. Excuse me, follow us. Friend us. I'm still like on Twitter, in Twitter Live. Please friend us, Living It Up with Lerato Shabalala. We are back next week, Wednesday from 10 until 11. Thank you very much.
To catch
you next week.
It's a pleasure.
Bye, everybody.
Property, I'm trying to invest. Money in by the neighborhood, that's how you rinse it. I could have bought a place in Dumbo before it was Dumbo for like $2 million.
that same building. Today it's worth 25 million. Guess how I'm feeling, Dumbo.
It's time to buy back the block. Buy back the block. It's time to buy back the block. Buy back the block. Buy back the hood. I'm about to buy back the hood. Buy back the hood.
This is CliffCentral.com.